Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's May the 10th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news, including a quote from an Ohio Republican saying temporarily lifting the tariff on ethanol imports could solve a short-term fuel problem. A threat and a deadline from a Nebraska senator who says he'll introduce legislation to sanction Japan if it does not allow U.S. beef imports by June 1. And word the House Appropriations Committee has added $18 billion to the FY07 ag budget. Also today, we'll hear from Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. And along the way, we'll catch up with extension entomologist Mike Gray from the University of Illinois. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The May wheat at 377.5, up 2 cents. July futures down a quarter at 384.5. May wheat in Kansas City at 455, a close at 8.75 lower today. From the corn pit nearby, May contract at 230 even, up a penny and a half. July at 240, up 2. And September settled at 251.25, 2 higher. December contract at 265.25, up 2.25. May soybeans now 593.25. They were up 3/4. July at 606, up a penny and a half. And the August 611 were up 3/4. November soybeans 625.25 were a penny and a half higher. May bean meal 90 cents lower at 178.60. May bean oil 24.95, up 25. From the Mercantile Exchange, May feeder cattle $100.82.5. They were 50 higher. June live cattle at $75.10, up 22.5, 100 weight. And the May lean hogs at $67.55 were up a nickel for the day. The outside markets, crude at $72.15, up $1.46 at this hour. The CRB at $360.22, 5.29 higher. The dollar at $84.60 is down 0.19. And the Dow at 11,647. Is up 7 at the hour. Gold trading at $705.70 in the June contract, up $4.20.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Just a couple things before we get to Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. Just a bit later in the program, we'll hear from extension entomologist Mike Gray. I did an interview with him this morning, also with Emerson Nafziger. Talked a great deal with Emerson about some corn in East Central Illinois, parts of Central Illinois, where it may have been crusted over. Here in East Central Illinois, where it may be laying in some temperatures that were a little cooler than many had expected, and what producers might want to do in the next week or so to take a look at that corn. I'll post that one on the web. Mike Gray, you'll hear this afternoon. Emerson tomorrow during the Closing Market Report. Now, here's Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services. Hi, Paul.
I can answer the question. Between now and Wednesday, there should be enough rain in East Central Illinois to bring crusted corn up. And we're going to get quite a bit of rain, and it's going to be cloudy, and there's going to be drizzle, sizzle, and there could be even too much rain in Indiana. But hopefully that crusted corn will come through the ground. The marketplace has been filled with a lot of news. The Fed Reserve just raised the discount rate 0.25 points. There was an oil inventories report that was slightly bearish, but shrugged those numbers off, and we had a higher day in corn, soybeans, and some of the wheat market.
Was it a heavy or light trade today? It seemed like it was an easy day compared to Monday and Tuesday.
Well, I think that's a good way to put it, a kind way to put it. The big thing I called right after the close to the floor and said, was there one feature? And they said the locals pushed the beans up, expecting someone to come in and buy them late in the trading day, and it didn't work. And there was a mad scramble to unload long positions. The market is focusing on a couple things. Number one, We're continuing to focus on Friday, the stocks report there, and winter wheat production estimate. And the second thing, of course, is this planting and weather. And, of course, the third thing that continues to interest everybody is, the situation with the low prices and potential strike of soybean exports out of South America.
And what do you make of it for producers as they look at these prices and maybe get pulled out of the field here in the next couple of days? Do they need to focus
themselves? Well, on the soybean issue, you know, I think it's pretty simple. There's a ton of beans being held by the producers both in the U.S. and South America. And one person said that he was able to get $6 at some sources of today. But, you know, but I think the big feature here, more than anything else, is that the fundamentals and the preliminary guest estimates from everybody feels that the carryover is going to increase in corn and possibly get a little smaller. I'm sorry, increase in beans, but get smaller in corn. And I think that, I think that's a good way to put it. And the soybean oil is the catalyst of keeping the soybean market on the strong side, as well as a lack of farmer selling both in the U.S. and Brazil.
So you're expecting, and you're talking about the increase in the carryover, so that would show up this Friday in the USDA reports. And would that cap the upside potential in the bean market for you, at least given normal growing conditions?
Well, it should, it could, but we still have a very stubborn, strong soybean market, and it's based on soybean oil and energy. And as long as crude oil remains strong, soybean oil remains strong. And, quite frankly, our surveys indicate that the farmer is going to be very stubbornly long in the U.S. because of two major issues, the drought issue and also the rust issue. And they think beans are extremely cheap, and they deserve a rally. Just look at gold, look at silver, look at crude oil, look at sugar. They deserve a better price. I won't argue with that. So there's a very strong, stubborn holder out there holding beans. And I think, as Rose in Des Moines said on Commodity Week last week, they have a Commodity Credit Corporation loan, and they're strong holders with that, giving them the support to hold soybeans.
They have the support to hold soybeans, but they do have to come out. And as you said, I think, on Commodity Week as well, the price of beans is the price of beans, and whether it's cheap or expensive at the moment is relative in terms of whether
getting
this thing
the most
can go
return.
Up. Yeah. I guess I'm thinking, are you thinking that the farmer's always thinking that the price of beans is cheap, but given that, does he need to think about marketing this crop?
You know, Todd, it is a card game, and they are looking at the outside forces in the world, and they are seeing some very strong commodity prices, and there's a lot of conversation about turning soybean oil into soy diesel. And we do know there's a tremendous supply of bean oil, palm oil, canola oil in the world. But the market is very stubbornly strong in here. And as a result of that, who's to say that they aren't going to win? And, my impression is that beans possibly are a little overpriced right now, and $6 with the carryover figures of possibly, over that 600 million bushels this coming fall are a little pricey. But, stranger things have happened. And, when we have conversation with the producers, it's a risk that they're willing to take. And I smile, we shake hands, and say we hope to see you next year at the same Outlook meeting. But, we listen out there when we talk to them, and that's the verdict we get. And we know that the critical time frame is probably going to be in late July, early August, when the when those million-dollar rains come through, and if we keep the rust away, then we're going to see some substantially lower soybean prices.
Well, I suppose at a minimum it won't hurt to stay on the sidelines until Friday's reports come out from USDA.
You bet.
Thanks much.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
We'll take a complete look at the ag weather at the bottom of the hour with Drew Lerner. A flash flood watch is in effect for much of southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana. That until 6 o'clock Central Time this evening. By the way, tonight in Illinois, it should be mostly cloudy. A few showers, some thunderstorms. Indiana, cloudy, scattered showers, some thunderstorms there as well. Lows from 46 in northwestern Illinois to 56 in eastern Indiana. Tomorrow in northern Illinois, northern Indiana, cloudy, showers, and thunderstorms.
In agricultural news, a top House Republican said Tuesday it's possible the House will back repealing a tariff on ethanol imports. House Majority Leader John Boehner, a Republican from Ohio, says, and this is a direct quote, "If we were to temporarily reduce the tariff on ethanol coming into our country, I think that would ultimately ease the shortage that is out there resulting in lower gasoline prices." Earlier in the day, Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman said President Bush is prepared to talk to Congress about lifting the tariff. The tariff is currently at 54 cents a gallon of ethanol. Nebraska Democrat Ben Nelson has issued a June 1st deadline for Japanese action on their U.S. beef ban. He says he'll introduce a Senate bill to impose trade sanctions against Japan if they don't resume U.S. beef imports by then. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says the Japanese should take Nelson's ultimatum seriously.
Congress has really lost its patience on this. They've been so busy with so many other items, but you should not assume that they're ignoring this very critical issue. There's a point at which Congress will take action. It won't be pleasant for anyone. Let's not go there.
Japan closed its market to U.S. beef on January 20th after a New York packing plant mistakenly sent a shipment of bone-in veal to Japan. The House Appropriations Committee approved $18.5 billion in add-ons to the fiscal year 2007 Agriculture Appropriations Bill late Tuesday. Committee amendments extended the peanut warehousing and milk income loss contract programs through the 2007 crop year. Full expenditures under the bill, including mandatory farm programs and the food stamp program, are expected to be $93.5 billion. Floor action on the appropriations bill could be next week. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley has reversed his position on extension of the 2002 Farm Bill in conjunction with an extension of presidential fast-track trade authority. Tuesday, Grassley withdrew his support after suggesting just 1 week earlier that it was a viable plan.
My statement of support for extending the farm safety net for a year or two, even if it's coupled with an extension of the negotiating authority for the president, is detrimental to the goals that I seek in Doha, because I've heard from some other than American negotiators that my statements have been read that there's really no pressure to get Doha done. So I'm withdrawing my support for a one-year, two-year extension of it.
Bills extending the 2002 Farm Bill have already been introduced in both the House and Senate. Politicians and ag groups are divided on the issue. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, right here on AM 580. and we're joined now by extension entomologist from the U of I, Mike Gray. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon. Pleasure to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the fields. Farmers got out in the state of Illinois fairly early. The pace has been quick for planting, and I suppose the insects, because of the mild winter, the relatively early spring heat up, might have gotten off to a good start, too.
Well, that's right. Things are moving along very quickly in the insect world, and as producers transition from planting of corn into soybeans in a very big way, it's time to not forget that there are some insects beginning to cause some issues in cornfields. A couple come to mind. We've had a number of reports of black cutworm problems in some cornfields, and again, we had a very strong migratory flight this spring of black cutworm moths, in some cases laying eggs out there in late planted weedy cornfields. So again, as we transition to soybeans, it would be well worth many producers' time and effort to get out there in seedling corn and look for early signs of black cutworm injury, small holes removed in leaves. Good idea to treat this insect with some respect this spring.
The black cutworm is one of those insects that you can fairly accurately predict when it will start to do damage based on the flights. So what do we see in different parts of the states?
Well, that is correct. Because we do have folks that monitor black cutworm flights with pheromone traps, anytime we get what we call an intense flight of moths, which is basically nine or more moths caught over a 1 to 2 day period, we can begin to accumulate heat units using a base 50 degree mark as our threshold. When 300 heat units have accumulated, that's at a point when cutting of plants can begin to occur. If you go to our pest management and crop development bulletin website, we do have a growing degree day calculator where you can go to specific areas throughout the state and really get very accurate information when cutting may begin to occur. So go to that IPM website, ipm.uiuc.edu, and take a look at when cutting may occur in your area.
What other kinds of insects are you looking at and should farmers be worried about?
Well, we are now beginning to get a number of reports of potato leafhoppers showing up in alfalfa. And as we know, about the southern two-thirds of the state, we've already taken that first cutting of alfalfa. Leafhoppers, again, another migrant that shows up about this time of the year, will begin to feed on the stubble. And these potato leafhoppers have piercing, sucking mouth parts. They can reduce the quality of that stand. So spend some time out there looking very closely for this very small wedge-shaped green lime insect. Sweep nets, if you've got them, certainly are helpful in finding or locating that insect in alfalfa. Bean leaf beetles, again, as we see the earliest planted soybean fields beginning to emerge, bean leaf beetles will move into those early planted soybean fields. It does take a lot of bean leaf beetles to cause economic problems unless they are vectoring diseases like the bean pod mottled virus. So mild winters, early planted soybeans, particularly those soybean fields that have timbered areas nearby them where bean leaf beetles can overwinter in protected areas, those soybean fields should be scouted for, certainly.
You're looking at two different things. Do you treat the bean leaf beetle or do you treat the disease?
Well, you really are looking at treatments of beetles when they reach high numbers. Treating for a virus is not something that's easily done. And it's a tricky one because in addition to bean leaf beetles, there's some research that is reported, I believe, in this week's issue of the Pest Management and Crop Development Bulletin about even insects like the Western Corn Rootworm variant that can potentially vector this virus as well. So it is very tricky business. I think obviously where you have fields with the greatest densities of bean leaf beetles, probably a greater likelihood, certainly for the potential to vector that disease.
Let's wrap up the discussion by talking about the soybean aphid.
Soybean aphid, of course, is an insect that always has the potential to cause some pretty important economic losses. We are very fortunate to have David Vogtland, an entomologist with the Illinois Natural History Survey, who manages the information obtained through a network of suction traps, not just in Illinois, but throughout the North Central region. David and a colleague of his, Bob O'Neill, a Purdue entomologist, recently conducted a survey the first 3 or 4 days of May looking for overwintering populations of aphids on buckthorn. And they found very low overwintering numbers of soybean aphids. I think that means good news, certainly for the first early round of potential soybean aphid infestations in Illinois. David indicates that certainly by mid to late summer, this is an insect that can always still, because of the productive nature of this insect, still one to watch for. But so far, very, very good news in terms of low overwintering numbers.
Mike, thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure.
U of I Extension entomologist Mike Gray. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
Joining us now to take a look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
No rain falling here in Champaign-Urbana. Not quite yet, but I think fairly soon. And probably in a good portion of the area you draw grain for, at least in parts of Illinois. Maybe you're going to miss it there in Terre Haute?
We have lucked out so far. There have been some pretty heavy rains, you know, around us, and a lot of the real heavy stuff just kind of developed, just kind of popped up in Park County, which is directly north of here. They're still calling for a half an inch to an inch, but so far it's just enough to run everybody out of the field, but we're supposed to rain all day tomorrow, so we're still running behind over here.
Yeah, how far behind are you?
We are probably, I'm going to say, two-thirds done in corn, maybe nearing 70%. There were quite a few producers that just got started over the weekend, so they just got started in corn, and some are completely done. So it's kind of all over the map. I'd say we're probably maybe 10 to 15% in beans, no more than that. And this is going to slow us down for quite a while here, and it's going to turn cold and stay that way for a while.
You're far enough south in the two-state region that I bet your producers are really antsy at this point.
They are. They're getting a little nervous about it, especially the ones that, you know, are just getting started. And this is going to make them even more nervous because they had a pretty good start. They got in Saturday and Sunday, so they got, you know, 3 or 4 good days in. But we hardly made a dent in beans, so we got a ways to go. And yeah, everybody's getting a little nervous.
And tell me about the basis in your area.
Basis levels are just maintaining. They're not getting any better. And because, if a farmer gets run out of the field and he starts hauling in, there's still a lot of bins to be emptied out before, you know, this coming harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think once the crop is in the ground and they concentrate on selling, the basis levels are going to head back south again. So we may be getting a little toppy here.
So I take it you're thinking that when they get out of the field here on the rains, that if they can get into their bin sites, that they might want to move something?
Yes. I mean, it just seems like every time this happens, you know, we start seeing them hauling in here and they either need a little cash or they either haven't cleaned out any bins or they're still coring bins. Some haven't moved anything.
Mm-hmm.
Some have moved quite a bit. So, yeah, every little lull we have in the field here, they start coming back in here. So there's still a lot of corn and beans out there to inventory before this is all over.
Any expectations for the USDA reports?
You know, I'm not really able to hear a lot. The last thing that I read earlier today that they're expecting a carryout this year of 2.265 and maybe 1.58 next year. Some are saying next year maybe as low as 1.4 in beans, somewhere between 675 and 700 next year. So, you know, there could be some surprises in there, Todd.
And your bids for the day?
All right, our cash corn today is 216, beans are 582, and wheat today is 342.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoon. I'll return in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Up next, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Illinois' two U.S. senators want President Bush to drop his recent call for an increase in ethanol imports. Senators Dick Durbin and Barack Obama today suggested it would only make the U.S. as dependent on imported ethanol as it now is on foreign oil. The president said on Friday that it makes sense to reduce, at least temporarily, the 54-cent import tax on ethanol. Decatur-based Archer Daniels Midland says it plans to build a new dry mill ethanol plant in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. The plant will be able to process 275 million gallons of ethanol per year when it's completed in the second half of 2008. ADM announced earlier this year that it would build a new ethanol plant in Nebraska, set to open in the first half of 2008. Champaign County healthcare consumers have collected 1,000 signatures on their petition asking Congressman Tim Johnson to support extending the enrollment deadline for Medicare Part D. A spokesman for the Urbana congressman says he does support a sign-up extension, but that a vote in the House isn't likely until Monday, which is the current enrollment deadline day. The Champaign City Council is slated to vote next week on a new plan for the downtown area, but at last night's study session, council members told city staff to go slow on one part of the plan. That's a proposal for an outdoor plaza on Neal Street, just north of the One Main Building. The plaza would replace a parking lot, which some local business owners say they depend on. Several council members told staff to look into alternate parking sites or an alternate location for the plaza. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is defending his use of executive orders. The governor has used his executive powers recently to authorize spending for stem cell research, require pharmacists to fill prescriptions for emergency contraception, and extend benefits to state employees' same-sex partners. Blagojevich told an audience in Urbana yesterday that his actions were controversial, but were also constitutional and the right thing to do. Starting next year, motorists in Clark and Floyd County, Indiana, will no longer have to get their vehicle emissions tested. The state of Indiana is dropping the program at the end of this year. They say it won't increase ozone pollution. They're working with federal officials on the change. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Drew Lerner normally joins us from World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City on Wednesday afternoons. Drew is not available today. We do have our own forecast for WILL from Mike Sola. By the way, a flash flood of watch is in effect for much of southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana, that until 6 o'clock Central Time this evening. Mike says tonight in Illinois, the skies will be mostly cloudy. There will be a few showers, some thunderstorms. Those will be most numerous this evening. In Indiana, cloudy, scattered showers, some thunderstorms there too. Lows will range, he says, from 46 in northwestern Illinois to 56 in eastern Indiana. Tomorrow in northeastern Illinois and northern Indiana, mostly cloudy, some showers, a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy. A chance for some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow will range from 54 in northern Illinois to 67 in southern Indiana. The extended forecast for the two-state region Friday and Saturday in the north and in central Indiana. Cloudy, cool, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, a mix of some clouds, some sunshine, cool. Sunday, mostly cloudy, some occasional drizzle, scattered showers. Highs Friday and Saturday in the 50s and the 60s. Highs Sunday in the 60s, the lows through that period in the 40s. You're listening to WILL. If you'd like to pick up what you've missed during the day on in the evening hours off our website, that's possible at WILLAG.org. There you can sign up for our weekend newsletter. Just hit the word subscribe, and you can listen to the daily podcast as well. You can subscribe to those podcasts if you'd like. It's an easy way to have ag programming delivered directly to your program or to your computer from WILL AM 580. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been the Closing Market Report.
This is Les Schulte, Director of Corporate Support. WILL has made a significant commitment to providing area farmers and agribusiness professionals with the best information possible. But we need your support to help continue and grow this service. If you own or manage a business, consider supporting WILL through one of our business programs. Call 217-333-0850 for more information.